Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and here's the latest example of NPR's investigative reporting. America is the most dangerous place in the developed world to have a baby. Not just for infant mortality either, for the mother. Women here are three times more likely to die in childbirth than women in Canada, and six times more likely than in Scandinavia. ProPublica's Nina Martin and Renee Montaigne, the longtime Morning Edition host, now a special correspondent for Morning Edition, teamed up for a six-month-long investigation on maternal mortality in the United States, and they're here to talk about their findings. Renee, thanks for coming on with us. Hi, nice to hear you again.
Yes, nice to be here.
And Nina, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
So, Nina, every year in the U.S., you report 700 to 900 women die from pregnancy or childbirth-related causes, and some 65,000 nearly die. Are those surprising numbers to you?
They are. I think most people think of maternal deaths as being a thing of the past, sort of, you know, Downton Abbey, Sybil dying in childbirth, that we're done with that. And I think most people don't know anything at all about the near deaths, the and near deaths are thought to be about, the CDC says, you know, for every death in the U.S., there are 100 women who nearly die. Those are pretty, and they mean really nearly die, not just mild complications. Those are pretty staggering numbers.
So, Renee, what are some of the main causes of death or near death in childbirth?
Well, there are several causes, some rare, some not so rare. One is preeclampsia, which leads to hypertension, high blood pressure, of a sort that can be fatal if not stopped earlier. There's hemorrhage, and that is one of the most common, if not in some groups, the most common. There are cardiac issues, cardiac arrest at different stages, and also postpartum, and that's a really important new thing that the medical community is starting to look at. There are infections, sepsis. And, you know, some of these, you know, I found interesting that so many of these, in preeclampsia being one, mentioned Downton Abbey, that's what Sybil died from back in 1920. These are complications that have been around for forever. They're in the literature. They're in history. They show up, you know, as you know, childbirth deaths. And yet, the United States has not got a handle on some of these that have every reason never to happen, almost never to happen. For instance, in the preeclampsia, that is a complication that Great Britain has pretty much solved. Two women in 2 years as a death.
Right.
Oh, not as a complication, but as a death. And we're talking about women dying here. Has pretty much solved. Whereas in the United States, there's a percentage. There's a percentage of women, and it's more in the dozens, but it is way farther higher than in Great Britain, and probably not. Maybe none of them should have died.
Nina, why?
Well, one of the big issues around preeclampsia in particular is, and hemorrhage fits into this category, another big one are blood clots, is preventability. So there's been some recent research from the CDC Foundation showing that in the states that they examined, they did analyses in four states, this is broader than this, and also California's done analyses, et cetera, that something like that the most preventable causes of death in the U.S., are hemorrhage, preeclampsia, and blood clots. I should say that the most preventable pregnancy-related deaths are caused by these conditions. And the problem is that in the U.S., you know, these are conditions that doctors and nurses and providers and hospitals and midwives and many, you know, people in the U.S. know how to treat as well as they do in Britain. But there's, you know, there's a real fragmentation of the healthcare system here. There's a lot of different ways that OBGYNs and nurses and hospitals practice. There's basically a real lack of standardization in terms of what you should do when you encounter a medical emergency. And a big issue is that because maternal deaths are, you know, a lot rarer than infant deaths, first of all, we focus, hospitals and providers are sort of have been really focusing their attention around maternal, around safety in the what they call the perinatal period. So really more on the infant, you know, the very vulnerable infant than the mother. And part of that is because there's this real perception that, you know, that maternal deaths are rare, and that the mom is, you know, pretty much always going to be fine. It's the baby that's going to have the problems. And so what you have happened is that a lot of providers they're just not prepared for emergencies. The emergencies are rare, and when they happen, they can go downhill really fast. And you know, you're supposed to be ideally you'd want your providers to be prepared for the rare event, just like you want airlines to be prepared for the rare, you know, the possibility of a crash. But in the U.S., around maternal care, they have not been prepared. And I would say this also goes both for, this is also an issue that not just for affluent women, obviously, like Lauren, but also, you know, African-American women and women of color. This is kind of across-the-board problem.
So, Nina, let me stay with you for a minute. Would that difference of unpreparedness at hospitals, maternity wards in the United States, being worse than in Canada, being worse than in Scandinavia, other developed countries, be for a systemic reason? Is it something about the funding mechanisms here, the way we pay for health care? Or if you're saying the problem is, or one of the big problems is, that our medical institutions are not prepared for pregnancy and childbirth emergencies, why would that be different here?
I would say that it is a systemic reason, or I should say reasons. I think they're really complicated, and it's one of the, that's part of why we're doing this project, is we really want to try to tease them out. I think that, you know, we have a very fragmented healthcare system. We don't pay very close attention to patients from the beginning to the end. A lot of women don't get healthcare, very good healthcare. They get, you know, people always think about prenatal care, but a lot of, but women in the U.S. are more likely to have good, you know, decent or at least access to prenatal care than they are to have access to postpartum care. And postpartum care, we know from the recent data, is a postpartum. Many of these deaths occur in the postpartum period, especially deaths involving cardiac issues and also mental health issues, which are really important to include in all of this. So there's that. There's, you know, just a lack of standardization. I mean, if you think about it, there's, you know, thousands of hospitals that deliver babies in the U.S. and care for care for new mothers. And all of them are you know, that some of them belong to systems and chains, but they basically all operate separately. We don't have national standards. We also don't have a national sort of systemic analysis or national or state sort of analyses of deaths when they occur, maternal deaths when they recur. They don't have to be, you know, reported to any particular organization. So basically what you have is a system where people, you know, the system is really fragmented. And then, of course, we have a population that is getting older, that's getting heavier, that's getting having more pre-existing chronic conditions going into pregnancy, which makes pregnancy much more difficult to manage. And so you have all of these things happening at the same time. And so, you know, and then when a death occurs, it's hidden. It's these women are lost. You know, even Lauren, whose death was really kind of public, was kind, you know, sort of lost for 5 years in the news and so.
Let me ask Renee about the story of Lauren Bloomstein. And if you're just joining us, listeners, my guests are ProPublica's Nina Martin and NPR's Renee Montagne, with their joint investigation of pregnancy and childbirth deaths in the United States. Women here have a greater likelihood of dying in pregnancy or childbirth from pregnancy or childbirth related causes than anywhere else in the developed world, 3 times as much as in Canada, 6 times more likely than in Scandinavia, 700 to 900 women a year in this country, and they report 65,000 a year nearly die. And one of the most powerful stories in your reporting Renee, is the story of Laura Bloomstein, who died after childbirth. She actually worked as a neonatal intensive care nurse.
Right. Yeah.
And her story is maybe the most emblematic of your reporting and how these deaths are preventable. So, Renee, can you say more about Lauren's story?
Sure. Lauren Bloomstein, husband Larry, was also a doctor, an orthopedic emergency surgeon. And these are two people she worked with. Preemies in a NICU. This is an intensive care unit for preterm babies. One of the reasons we picked her story was that, one, it was terribly sad and super compelling, but so many of these are. But also because she, in a way, because her husband was a doctor, because Lauren actually was a nurse working with preemies and lived, or not lived, but worked in that hospital her entire career, Monmouth Hospital down in New Jersey, she would have seemed to be immune from any of the issues that beset the women who get caught up in emergency situations and those around them are unprepared or don't spot it soon enough. And oftentimes that's really what much of this is about, is spotting things early and stopping them before they get out of control, like hemorrhage is another one. So Lauren ended up having a perfect pregnancy, having great prenatal care, apparently knowing what her body is telling her and never complaining about anything sort of to the end, and is induced on a Friday afternoon and ends up after vaginal delivery, all of which was mildly difficult, but the odd pain, but nothing dramatic. This is as Larry put it, and honestly, it was Nina and I trying to do this, spend an evening and an afternoon with him and not crying on a regular basis, because every turn of events after that felt like and probably was, could have stopped what happened. It could have stopped her death. But within, you know, she holds the baby 20 minutes after the baby is born. She gives it up and she never is alive again to see that baby, because there's an onset of what turned out to be preeclampsia. And there's, at early stages of preeclampsia, there's a simple potential fix, which is something called magnesium silicate. I mean, there's ways of doing it in Britain. These are very common things that are done.
Yeah. So we're going to run out of time in a few minutes. I want to put this in political context, because you write that the notion that babies deserve more care than mothers is enshrined in the Medicaid program, and that the new bill in the House to replace the Affordable Care Act comes into this story too. Nina Howe.
Well, so the new bill out of Congress that's being, I guess it was passed out of the House, you're talking to the bill that would replace repeal the Affordable Care Act. One of the things that it would, among the many things it would do, would be to gut Medicaid, which covers 45% of births and postpartum care for women in this country. It would potentially eliminate certain things as being considered essential benefits that insurers have to cover, including maternity care. And it would also allow, you know, very different treatment now for women or for people with pre-existing conditions. And as we've discovered, you know, everything in the past, things like, you know, pregnancy and having had a C-section were considered pre-existing conditions. Having major complications and surviving them sets women up for having basically pre-existing conditions for the rest of their lives. So it would really radically transform health care to women and maternal care at a moment when we are starting to see in our reporting that the maternal care system is already, you know, deeply inadequate for many women.
Renee, in our last minute, can you put this story into the context of NPR investigative reporting generally? You know as well as I do that this is a moment in our country's history when investigative journalism, not just about the president, but about things that affect all Americans, like your story on the safety of having a baby in this country, feels more relevant than ever. Can you put this story in the context of NPR's investigative unit?
Well, NPR's investigative unit has done something in the last 5 years that had never happened at NPR before. It's invested, if time into stories that again and again reveal important aspects of our society that need to be changed, need to be looked at, need to be known. And this takes, well, there are four correspondents on the unit, but people like myself, other correspondents throughout NPR, are able to pass through the unit, use their resources and their ways of looking. In this case, NPR has collaborations with other organizations. ProPublica is one of the most stellar. Obviously, they're correctly famous for doing amazing investigations, and I couldn't have even begun with this on my own. I mean, Nina has years and years of working in the area of women's health. So it was a great gift, but also it's what NPR is doing, working with people who are working with these subject matters, for over many years. And I think this is something that its time had come before, but its time is really now to exist within NPR and to be offering these kinds of stories. I mean, I'm very proud of, and there's stories to come, by the way, both from ProPublica and me. I have three more stories coming up in the next several weeks.
And I see, and listeners, listen up, I see that Nina and Renee are collecting your stories of anybody who you know who died or nearly died in pregnancy, childbirth, or within a year after delivery. If you would care to share one of those stories, email them at maternal@propublica.org, maternal@propublica.org, or maternalhealth@npr.org, maternalhealth@npr.org. And we'll put those emails on our show page, too, if you want them publicized. Nina Martin from ProPublica, NPR's Renee Montaigne, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Brian.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.